Yes, and what we do for or do to somebody else is about us, all of us. And we're talking about ourselves, only maybe time-shifted a bit. I'll give you an example of a specific area which I know about because I work with Torch Trust, working with people with sight loss. Every day across Britain, 100 people are told that they're losing their sight. You can say the same for many other chronic or disabling conditions. A very small proportion have the support they need. A very small proportion have the counselling they need, which is surprising given that between a third and a half will experience some of the symptoms, exhibit some of the symptoms of clinical depression. Well, it's a lost experience, and there's a lot to be said about that. I don't have time today, my passion, to talk about it forever. But one thing I'd like to leave with you. A survey conducted by Scope recently, an opinion survey about people and speaking to disabled people and daring perhaps to touch on the subject of disability. The majority of the people, says Richard Hawke, CEO of Scope, we spoke to, said they were worried about speaking about disability in front of a disabled person, with many worrying that they would say something inappropriate or use an offensive term by mistake. We understand that, don't we? And of course, perhaps it's the last subject we want to talk to with a disabled person. But so often, because we do not know what to say, especially if somebody comes and tells us, I've just been told I'm losing my sight, I'm never going to walk again, I've got dementia. We don't know what to say, so we talk only about the weather and having a cup of tea. We don't engage in any serious conversation on any subject with that person. What is our pastoral response? A question for all the pod today. What is our pastoral response to people within our churches and within our communities who have learned that they are going to live with a chronic illness or a disability? How do we respond to that? Let's think about that this afternoon. And can the church be the place, above all else, where people find the right sort of response, the willingness to engage, and the understanding that guides a pastoral response? Bless you.
Hi. We didn't get time for this earlier, but just one way in which we can provide more support for people in that kind of situation is through parish nursing. You may or may not have heard of that. What it means is that you look around your church congregation or in your area, you find a Christian nurse, and you send them off on a course, and they become a parish nurse, helping the volunteers to develop a health ministry through the local church, supporting people who do have those exact kinds of experiences, helping people to know how to respond to diagnoses that come as a bit of a shock. Parish nurses do all sorts of things. They do a clinic session sometimes in churches, but they promote healthy eating and exercise. They don't do dressings or injections because you can get those through the GP, but they provide the extra time, the listening time that is often needed. And they can pray with people if they want that because they're coming from the church. And if people know that, as all of them will do, through a leaflet they're given, then they can ask whether they would like a prayer. And they can train and coordinate volunteers. They make the links with the GP surgeries. So all those important connections that need to be made when somebody has a diagnosis or even thinks that they might have a diagnosis coming that they might not know about. So they help to reduce hospital admissions. And doesn't the NHS want that right at this moment in time? They're available to carers. They can provide the advice and support needed for a carer to remain healthy. They can help to support groups that meet to enable various people with various conditions to have some kind of support in the church. And at Parish Nursing Ministries UK, we want to see this happen all over the country. We are all over the country, as you can see. We're right up in the north of Scotland as well, down there in Devon. And we're not quite in Northern Ireland yet, but we're in Wales, and we've just had an application from Jersey. So we really are all over the country and growing, and all over the denominations as well. And we'd love to see other nurses coming forward, other churches coming forward to develop this wonderful ministry. Please pray for us. Please introduce us to nurses that you know, ministers that you know, and support us perhaps. You can do that. You can become a friend of Parish Nursing, and that will help us to see this grow all over the country so that every person in the UK, if they wanted, could have access to a parish nurse. Thank you.
The Japanese have a word, kintsukuru, the art of repairing broken pottery with gold or silver, making items more beautiful and valuable because they have been broken or badly damaged. Paul talks about being surrounded and battered by troubles, but God hasn't left his side, thrown down but not destroyed. Some think certain people are badly damaged, but God's grace and love poured into our lives makes us more beautiful. God says in Isaiah 43, "You're precious in my sight and I love you." Dementia can be frightening, inconvenient, awful, at times challenging, like this mountain. But there can still be beauty. But what determines whether people look in wonder or in fear? Nothing is wasted in God's economy, so I see my dementia as a gift to understand, not just as a GP, but from the inside. When I couldn't remember things and couldn't find my way home from work, didn't recognise my colleagues, it was tough. But God's gifts are given for the benefit of others, so mine is also, and I have joy and purpose in finding out how to do that each day. Fear is often not knowing or understanding. There's always a reason. Feelings remain when facts are forgotten and patterns continue, and the spiritual certainly remains. My father, who had dementia, was still a man of God when he died. In Alzheimer's, amyloid plaques block electrical signals along some of the pathways in the brain, locking away memories. But if we lose the key to the front door, we could try the back door, or even climb in through a window. There are innumerable pathways in the brain. We have to find other ways to access these memories before the neurons die from disuse. I can't read easily anymore, unless I know what it says, so I listen to the Bible each day. I do and say foolish things, but Paul says God chooses the foolish things of this world. He even uses our weaknesses to further his plans. Think of Samson. I find other people in the dementia-friendly village where I live listen because I have dementia. And it's such a privilege to help steady them on their path with or even towards God, which had become treacherous or uninviting, to rebuild trust, lost sometimes sadly through church's ignorance. Psalm 145 says, God is good to everyone, his compassion intertwined with everything he does. Now, intertwined means part visible and part hidden. In dementia, we certainly don't see everything anymore, but we can still trust God. This clever picture shows a man either looking at you or the wall. Now, you don't know how I see him. It's easy to make assumptions about me and about other people with dementia. So why don't people ask us? There's always a reason. People with dementia can talk in word salads, not realising they're not making sense. But if you join in the emotional content of the conversation, reflecting back recognised words, sometimes they do begin to talk sense. It's so rewarding, even if they have reverted to their hometown. One lady, not long ago where I lived, it was Danish just before she died of dementia. I couldn't understand her, but her husband could. He said, "How did you do that?" We don't usually want to know the answer to questions we ask again and again, but you need to hear the meaning behind the words. "I want to go home" just means I'm not feeling at home. I'm not comfortable here. And time travel is if one thinks it's a different decade. Someone may not recognise you, remembering you when your hair was a different colour. We didn't wear glasses. Reassure them, don't argue with them. For me, give me context, explain who you are. I expect you've heard of Maslow's pyramid hierarchy of needs. The other week I saw it to demonstrate how we revert to just basic levels as dementia progresses. Rubbish. Even if vulnerable and dependent, we're not empty shells or dead inside. So I've redrawn it as a solid rectangle. We can still have purpose, and certainly those around us can facilitate this. We're always sensitive to feelings, and we can still know what it is to love and be loved if given the opportunity. Jesus became vulnerable when he came to earth and dependent. It must be jolly tough for the creator of the universe. And he had to learn things by the things that he suffered. As Johnny said this morning, for the joy set before him, he endured. But many people need help to find that. They often appreciate the CDs of familiar hymns, even if they're not churchgoers, because they remember it from their childhood. And I think Louise Morse's book, Frank and Linda's story, is brilliant. Meltdowns can be understood as sensory overload when we revert to personal childhood behaviours when we couldn't cope with life. Temper tantrums, throwing things, verbal abuse, dissolving into tears, running away. We were and are all different. But being overwhelmed by numbers, noise, unfamiliarity, complexity, too many expectations, troublingness can cause meltdown. And for us, church includes five of those things, so it's very likely to happen there. And tiredness makes things worse. So when I was asked for a talk in the evening, it was a bad idea for me. And when I had a meltdown in church, the vicar's wife said, "You better not come anymore." So I thought, well, I better invite them for lunch. And he's brilliant now. He just didn't know he didn't know. He sends me the order of service in advance and even links to YouTube for the new songs. Going to hospital ticks all the boxes, particularly with highly polished floors looking like water, and we need someone familiar with us all the time. But it's not always possible to prevent meltdown. So don't ask questions or overwhelm us with words or instructions. Settle us into a safe, familiar pattern, because something may not be making sense and disturbed us. But what did Jesus do when the disciples had a meltdown? Remember after the resurrection, when he appeared to them in the upper room, they were in terrible tears. He reassured them. He gave them simple instructions, one at a time. "Look, touch my hands." And then he told them, "Go and find some food." A familiar pattern. And by the way, it's no good asking, "Do you take tea and coffee? Do you have sugar?" You'll just receive a blank stare from us. That's three questions in one. Only give us one at a time. And because feelings remain and facts are forgotten, it is always worthwhile visiting or taking out someone with dementia, because they will always remember when they enjoyed it, even if they don't remember who took them. And colours always give joy. Reflections of Hope, a book on the 23rd Psalm, I always find very popular where I live. Carers need lots of support too. At my previous church, before I moved into the village, another man used to meet up regularly with my husband on a weekly basis to support him and pray with him, and he really appreciated that. So when I revert to childhood patterns, when things get too much to me, I remember Jesus said, "Whoever becomes like a little child will enter the kingdom of heaven." And my present church, who originally said I shouldn't come anymore, now are marvellous. They enable me rather than disable me. It's because they didn't know. And each day I say to God, "This is the day you've made, and I will rejoice in it. How can I serve you today?" I have nothing to fear. God pours his love and care into my cracks, and I know I'm precious to him. And I have a website with many free resources if any of you want to find out more.
Jennifer's website and the film where she is speaking on it. What comes over is the graciousness and the lovely spirit, and I think if ever anybody feels they may be diagnosed with dementia, visit that website before you do anything else. Well, before I start proper, can I ask first, was anybody here this morning? Were you here this morning?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to repeat something I did this morning because I think it's important, so I hope that's all right with you. We read books a lot from people who have dementia or who have experience of dementia, and someone called Christine Bryden, who was diagnosed with dementia in her late 40s, and when she was a really high-flying executive with the Australian government, has written two books. One is Who Will I Be When I Die? And the other one is Dancing with Dementia. That was 17 years ago, and I met her recently. And she's still functioning very well. She gives talks in churches. And looking at her, I felt that even as she was now and as I am now, that she still had, I felt, a larger cognitive capacity, a bigger brain than I had. But in one of her talks at a conference, she made some remarks which I think for us encapsulate the very reason we're here, the very reason you're sitting and listening to how to make churches friendly for people with dementia. And I've taken what she said and I've put it in the form of a prose poem, and some care homes have tacked it up on their doors. And every time I read it, it speaks to me afresh. She said, "As I lose an identity in the world around me, which is so anxious to define me by what I do and say, rather than who I am, I can seek an identity by simply being me, a person created in the image of God. My spiritual self is reflected in the divine and given meaning as a transcendental being. As I travel toward the dissolution of myself, my personality, my very essence, my relationship with God needs increasing support from you, my other in the body of Christ. Don't abandon me at any stage, for the Holy Spirit connects us. I need you to minister to me, to sing with me, pray with me, to be my memory for me. You play a vital role in relating to the soul within me, connecting at this eternal level. Sing alongside me, touch me, pray with me, reassure me of your presence, and through you, of Christ's presence." Because this is a forum and we're just having a short talk, I thought it might be helpful for you to know my background and experience, so you would know what questions you could ask me or you could expect me to have an answer. And if I don't have an answer, I know hundreds of men who do. In our care homes, I work for a charity called the Pilgrim's Friend Society. When I first began 14 years ago, there were only about maybe two or three people with dementia in each home. Now there are around 70% of people with dementia in our care homes. But we witness at first hand the power of ministering in the spirit to people who are committed Christians. You are literally, as Christine says, ministering in an eternal way. You are ministering to the essence of the person. Often as a person with dementia seems to change, you feel that you've lost that person. And when I did my master's dissertation, one of the strongest themes that came out that was hugely damaging to families and family caregivers was this continuing sense of grief as they experience loss after loss after loss. But the thing to remember, and Dr. Graham Stokes says this in his book too, the person remains. They maybe can't access the controls that help them to express themselves, and those same neural controls don't enable them to understand things properly. But the core of the person, the very essence, remains. And if that person is a believer, the most powerful thing you can do is minister to them at that level. We see cases of people rementing, as it's called, coming back with powers that they've apparently lost after singing a familiar old hymn or listening to scriptures. In fact, one visiting missionary, who's a long-time supporter now of ours, said it completely changed his attitude to ministering to people with dementia when he saw the behaviour of those who were apparently vacant come alive when he read the scriptures. It's much more. I was talking with John over lunch, and we were saying dementia is much more than a pathology. It's not just a neuronal damage. The person, the personality, everything about the person, we're just much more than a brain with a pathology. Well, that's who I am, a cognitive behavioural therapist. My dissertation was on researching the effects of families caring for a loved one with dementia. I've written books on dementia, and they're out there, and Jennifer does recommend one on her website, and did today. We also produced an information pack with separate leaflets on different topics for people who said they don't read books. I felt like including a prayer for people who don't read books in each pack, specifically. But the feedback we get, they're very helpful. We do seminars, training, workshops, and conferences. I'm communications manager with the Pilgrim's Friend. It's 208 years old. We had our Thanksgiving caring for older people. So really, I'm sort of steeped in older people, you might say. In fact, I think when I arrive there myself, I'll feel that I've been there all the time. Because, as somebody wrote recently, old age is another country. You don't really understand its customs until you get there. But I think I've learnt them so well now, I've got my passport. Well, one of my colleagues, a home manager, who is passionate about people with dementia in particular, resigned early so that she could join with her husband David in making their church in Suffolk truly dementia-friendly. And for 18 months now, it has been a truly dementia-friendly church. They have a number of people attending. The good thing is that most of the people they know already. But if somebody was to bring someone new in with dementia, the first thing that they would do is get to know the person. Because the essence of good dementia care is called person-centered care. But that doesn't encapsulate all it means. It means really knowing the person. When you really know them, you understand them. For example, in one home, we have petting animals in the homes. And one man said, out dog, out dog, out dog. And they said, we must put on his care plan that he doesn't like dogs. That wasn't the case at all. One of the carers who knew him said, he used to run a retail establishment. He loves dogs. But if a dog came in, he would say, out dog, out dog. So you see the real importance of knowing the person. There's a very good book by a clinical psychologist, Oliver James. It's called Contented Dementia, and it gives real guidelines into how to know the person. Well, Rosie's Church now has people with dementia on Sunday for weekday services. They give very good pastoral care and pastoral visiting. They have good support for their carers, for family members, and support for individuals themselves. So how did they do it, and what did they need? Well, first of all, there's an educative process that has to be gone through first. Because most of us have grown up in churches where there's a routine structure. We have expectations. We don't like babies to make a noise, and we can't cope with a visiting toddler running up and down the aisle. And I mentioned this morning, because this is so typical to me, I used to fly an awful lot because I had children in boarding school. And I always noticed that the men who were travelling on their own wanted to get as far away from the children and were always out at the bulkhead as they possibly could. So I used to say, if I could, because I like to be at the front of a plane, put me up with the children. and I still like to be up with the children. Children's noise, to me, is like music on my ears. But some people don't like the noise of children. So you have to get the whole fellowship to agree, to understand what's going on with somebody with dementia, how precious they are to the Lord, and the sort of behaviour that might occur. For example, when somebody shouts out, "What's he going on about?" Or when somebody bursts into racking sobs, which is hugely upsetting. What's going on there? Or what's going on when a little lady gets up and marches right up to the front where the speaker is and stands right in front of him and looks him up and down and left and right and inspects the buttons on his coat, much to his great disconsternation. So once that expectation and that understanding is in place, then you can move forward. And for this, you always need a project leader. You need somebody who will be in charge. And Rosie and her husband happen to be those team leads, so it's probably a church with the best team leader in the whole of the UK, I would say. And they also examined the building and they made some changes. There are three things, I've got 1 minute, so there are three things that have come through from questions so far this morning. One is how to visit people with dementia. I've talked about people who are known. We're doing training for our supporters now because our supporters are used. We have generations of supporters. The word commitment is branded on generations of families in our charity. But they started falling off because although you can visit an older person and you can have a conversation and it's very satisfying, the feedback, they're usually glad you went. With someone with dementia, that isn't always there. You don't get the satisfaction of a good conversation or warm feedback. So we're training our supporters in how to be with people with dementia, how to do soul talk, how to look, as Jennifer said, beyond the words to the feelings, because feelings are enormously high with people with dementia. So that's one thing that we are constantly asked about and that we give training in churches for. I think that's all I've got. There are two other things, but I think I've come to the end of my time and I want everybody to have time to ask their questions, because this morning not everybody could ask their questions. So what I can say is we have a stand. It's the first stand out there. It's got my books and the pack on it. If you have questions that aren't answered here now, come and ask me afterwards. And preferably bring me a cup of tea as well, no sugar. Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Trevor Adams. I was going to show you a video, but we can't fix it up here. So this is an impromptu talk about what I'm doing at Livability in terms of dementia-friendly churches. A bit about me first. I've been working with people with dementia for the last 35 years. I'm a nurse, I trained as a nurse, and I worked in practice for 10 years, and for 20 years I worked in a university where I was a lecturer in mental health and specialised in dementia care. I left that about 3 years ago and I started thinking about dementia-friendly churches. My background has been writing books, doing research, teaching, all in a secular background. But I was very interested about joining all this secular stuff about dementia with Christianity, my Christian faith. And the idea of dementia-friendly churches seemed to be, you know, a way forward in bringing the two things together. And so I looked around for people to work with, and I came across Livability. Livability are a really great organisation, and they've been really very supportive of this idea of dementia-friendly churches. And in the last 2 years, together, we've taken this forward. What is a dementia-friendly church? A dementia-friendly church, we believe, has three properties. First of all, it is inclusive to people with dementia. It welcomes people with dementia. It accepts them for who they are. Secondly, it's accessible to people with dementia. The facilities, the type of worship that is there, it's accessible to people with dementia. And lastly, looking more outward, beyond the church, a dementia-friendly church engages with their local community to help it become a dementia-friendly community. So there's three aspects there. Dementia-friendly churches are inclusive to people with dementia, accessible to people with dementia, and also engages with their local community to make it, help it become a dementia-friendly community. And this fits in really well with government policy. About 3 years ago, David Cameron talked about the Dementia Challenge, a great move forward to support people with dementia in this country. And a key idea there was the idea of a dementia-friendly community. Now, as a Christian, I believe churches have an awful lot to contribute to people with dementia and their local community. I see lots of people having some sort of, perhaps they don't go to church now, but they may have some sort of connection with their local church, perhaps through a baptism, wedding, funeral, whatever. And so a lot of people have got some sort of engagement already with the church. And I believe that churches have an awful lot to contribute to people with dementia. And it all fits. And I believe that churches need to reconsider its mission in terms of including people with dementia and working with them. So that's what we're doing at Livability. In more specific terms, it's been a really exciting time. We've been going around to churches. I mean, last year I went up right into Scotland, in John's territory, to Perth Baptist Church, and I did workshops there. But we've been going all over England, helping churches understand what dementia is and how they can be supported in becoming dementia friendly. We've developed what we call, now I find this difficult to say, top tips, 10 top tips. Last year we developed 10 top tips for churches seeking to become dementia friendly. And they're on our website. You go to the Livability website, you'll find our 10 top tips for churches seeking to become dementia friendly. However, we've developed actually 40 more now. Right, 40 more. 10 top tips. Right, TTTs. Right, TTTs for dementia friendly churches who want to do something about their architecture to make them accessible to people with dementia. TTTs, churches want to do something that can help worship. Another lot about prayer. Another lot about communicating with people with dementia. And another 10 about developing this engagement with the local community. And we see this as really a really good practical resource that we're giving free to the Christian community to help them support dementia-friendly churches. And you can find out all about that on our website. Also on our website is that last year we were working with the Litchfield Diocese on doing training. And we had a really great time. And it went really well, as some people here who was on the course know. And we did a video. And that video of people being interviewed, David, myself, and various other people talking about the training. And most importantly, some people not very far away saying how beneficial the course was. So you can see that video on our Livability website, the Dementia Friendly Church part. I've got 1 minute because I digressed. Okay. Also, in the last year, what we've been doing is working with national organisations. I've been on a subcommittee to the Prime Minister's Dementia Challenge, looking at developing community resources, dementia-friendly churches. That's been really exciting. At this very moment, I'm writing a letter for the Dementia Action Alliance that is designed to go to senior people in the church. Yeah, bishop. What we want is as many bishops as possible to become dementia-friendly, to go on a dementia-friendly course. Yeah? Wouldn't that be great? not just the Church of England, the Roman Catholic Church, Baptist Church, Methodist Church, these great big churches like Hillsong, New Wine, right, really great resources can really support people with dementia. So, livability, very positive. We're thankful for God for what he's allowed us to do, but we want to go further because we believe in a dementia-friendly church. Thank you.
Thank you, Trevor. Dementia-friendly bishops. I like that. Thank you very much, Pano, for stories, experiences, care strategies, church strategies, nursing strategies. What more can somebody want? Questions. We have about 15 minutes for questions, discussions, complaints.
Just wondering whether you could give any advice on how to help pastorally a carer or partner when the person with dementia becomes aggressive, particularly when it involves physical aggression. I've come across two cases, one that's ongoing at the moment. Very worrying. Normally, I would call it, if it wasn't dementia, I would say that's domestic abuse and the woman ought to get out. But obviously that isn't what's happening. And I'd wonder if you had any advice on how to pastor both the person and their carer in that situation.
Interestingly, I asked that same question of Dr. Robert Lawrence, a psychiatrist who's lead researcher at St. George's Health Trust, because it's something we're often asked, or a variation of it. If it's not physical, then it's verbal abuse and apparent complete change in the relationship. What's going on there? When somebody is reacting very aggressively and very strongly, there are ways of behaving in that. But before I get onto that, and I'm sure Jennifer has something to say as well on that, it's finding the trigger. There's always a trigger. Sometimes the trigger is that the person is being asked to do something. When people have dementia, it's very difficult to ask them to do anything direct. You need to mirror it to them or cajole them with it. So very often that was part of the response. So the person needs training in understanding that. Look for the triggers. What were the triggers? What to do when it happens? One of our carers had to go in and clean up a resident, and she was very abusive to her. In fact, she threw her out. She said, "I don't want you in my room." So the carer knew that she had to go back in, but they'd been well trained. So she just stayed there for a minute or two, took off her cardigan and thought, right, I'll go in and try again. And this time the lady looked at her and said, "Oh, I'm glad it's you. I'm glad it's not the other one. I didn't like her, dear, but I know you love me," she said. And she said, "But I don't think much of the other one." And the carer said, "I don't sometimes either." So there's that. Also, I wonder if sometimes, and this is a case I personally experienced, where a nurse was married to a man who had been in the security service, prison service, all his life. His antenna through his life had been trained to be out there when things were wrong, when things weren't quite right. He was trained to sense danger. And as his dementia advanced, he took to pinning her down. And she couldn't find a way of handling that, and eventually he had to go into an EMI ward. So it's the triggers, it's not provoking something, it's understanding more about what will get that person off. And when that behaviour is there, you either leave the room if they're very aggressive with it, or if they're just shouting, stand to the side, not directly in front of them, but stand to the side of them. So I'd recommend that these people have training. I don't know if Alzheimer's Society actually offers training in handling behaviour like that. Also, what's going on very often is I interviewed a lady and her husband. She was in 84. She was terribly English, terribly upper class English, I thought. Cut glass accent, which I always find a bit disconcerting because I'm Welsh and I don't have that kind of cut glass accent. But she said her husband, who had been a university lecturer, a terribly refined man, she said, quite a proud man. When he developed dementia, eventually he had to go into hospital. But whereas he'd always been very restrained and very refined, he took to leaping on her and trying to throttle her. And it took two nurses to hold him away. And there are some theories about why that is, but actually, nobody really knows the deep, deep answer because you can't truly get in there. What are you going to say?
Well, everyone is different. What works for one person works for another. But as I was saying earlier, you know, he's obviously going into meltdown, and there's always a reason for that. Always a reason, because aggression and frustration is frustration of the inability to cope. No longer feeling in control, so they revert to childhood patterns, I believe, and how they couldn't cope with life. So they need to be enabled to remain in getting control again. And the best thing is obviously to prevent it, and I have oftentimes daily experience where I live on how to prevent people kind of going into meltdown with aggression, because you get to know people well, you can see the signs, and if you know them well, you can divert them into something. But everyone is different, but there's always a reason.
If I could just add to one thing that might be helpful to that point. In relation to Christian love, Jesus says, who's asked what's the essence of the law and the prophets are, he says, love God, love neighbour, love yourself. So that kind of three-way love is the essence of where we are as Christians, as human beings. But he also tells us to love our enemies as we love ourselves. Now, that tells you something important. It tells you that A, Christians have enemies, and B, that you have to love yourself. And sometimes your friends can, for lots of different reasons, become your enemies, even if momentarily in that sense. And so I think part of the response to that kind of aggression and violence that you're describing is to make sure that you take care of yourself in the midst of that. We're not called to respond violently to violence, but we're also not called to accept violence that prevents us, in some senses, from loving ourselves in the way that God wants us to. Other questions? Let's keep fits on the ball.
This is a positive thing, actually, because I wanted to share a gift I received from a friend who had an advanced vascular dementia over many years and then finally died. But what she gave me was the gift of time. There was talk this morning about how we live faster, digital enhanced age, we don't have time for relationships anymore. When I went to see Clara, she got to the point, she had no memory of the past that I could find, no ability to plan for the future. So all I could do was live in the present with her. And I'm the sort of person that always knows what I'm doing in half an hour's time, 3 days next Tuesday. And this was such a gift to me. And people used to say to me, how kind of it is. Well, actually, I'm the one that's receiving here. She gave to me. And I think it's important to remember that everybody has an ability to give, and we just need to be able to recognise that.
That's great. Thank you.
John, could I just supplement?
This is not a comment from any expertise, but one from experience. I was at a funeral for a lady who had worked with Torch Trust many years ago, and in her last 10 years of her life, she lived with advancing dementia, and she'd had some very dark periods, very violent, and had made the life of her closest living daughter absolutely miserable, to the point the mental health of the daughter was jeopardised. But you know, at the funeral, talking to the daughter and just trying to show some empathy for that situation she'd been through, she said, but through it all, though there were some really bad years, At the end, I came to love my mother again. Not for who she was, but for what she had become. She came through to a new relationship with her mother, not based on the memory of the pre-dementia mother, but on the mother with dementia in her last years. And a little bit echoing what you said, she gave thanks for those last years with her mother.
Back in the autumn, there was a summit chaired by David Cameron. I just wonder what effect that summit has had and is likely to have, raising, hopefully, the awareness of dementia.
Yeah, I think that
the
sometimes, because I speak to so many people and hear so many on-the-ground experiences, I wonder if the government is suffering from a disassociative disorder. Because in many respects, it'll say something. For example, living well with dementia. I know people who are living well, who are living with dementia, but they wouldn't say they're living well. They're living okay. And many have adjusted. I met a couple just a couple of weeks ago in Chester. But, for example, the memory clinics, it's still a very postcode lottery. In my experience, from what I've been told anyway, some you can get an appointment through fairly okay, but some people, my colleague's mother died waiting for her appointment. It's very long ago. I think that they mean well, and I think that they really would like to, but again, at a conference where I was in London, it was the Alzheimer's Society Dementia Strategy Conference, over lunch I said to one of the psychiatrists, but you know, two-thirds of people we know with dementia are living at home. They're being cared for by their families. And I said, I haven't heard anything today about supporting those caregivers. You may remember that in 2010, the then Labour government, I think it was, made £25 million, I think it was, available to hospitals, or to, no, £50 million available to trust for respite care. But under the Freedom of Information Act, when a couple of leading charities found out how many had actually spent it on respite care, only a very small amount of it had been spent on respite care. And the trust said they were committed, they had to meet other priorities. So from my point of view, and it's only from what I've heard, it's a postcode lottery at best. And also, if you are a medical person yourself, if you are a professional person yourself, if you know the routes, you are much more likely to get the help that's been promised than if you don't.
Well, I've been on the circuit now for, 3 years, and I've met a lot of these people and have a lot to do with politicians as well. And I think things have changed for the better. I think these dementia-friendly communities have really taken off. I've been involved in the launch of a lot of those, and I'm sure you've heard of the Purple Angel, haven't you, in shops and things. I think a lot of positive has been done. I think we are moving.
Yes, and this fits into dementia-friendly churches. Basically, a lot is happening, and the way to see it is that dementia is a really big problem, and the government knows it. It's a very costly problem. And the way the government is dealing with it is by providing some really good services. It may be postcode lottery, but some really good services. But basically, they're throwing it onto us, the community, to sort it out, because they can't. And so we're in a situation where various groups, whether it's Women's Institute, Town Women's Guild, Neighbourhood Watches, and churches, are given the opportunity to do something. And I think churches can do something really good. Partly because of their ethos, Jesus' words, but also because they are valued in the community. And I think, you know, a few years ago, when I was at the university, people were interested in the fact of churches and dementia. In fact, you know, I would be quite scared of saying I was a Christian. But now, people are thinking about what churches can do for people with dementia. And I think there's really great opportunities there. The government, people in dementia, the professors of dementia care that I know are really interested now in listening to what churches can do to support people with dementia. It's a really great opportunity.
Time for one last question. You can have my special microphone.
Yeah, just a quick question. What sort of support do you know of for people who are deaf and have dementia? Because on a personal note, I have very much difficulty finding anything for my father, who was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And although I was very lucky to get him into a clinic in London to get the diagnosis done all in sign language, the care since then, there isn't any. And I just wondered, where do we go for support like that?
Again, this is only based on my experience in the homes, because it's not something I've thought of before. But they have a lot of softball rolling around things. They have softball skittles where they knock things down. And they have something that they do with a huge parachute. That's all I can think of on the sport. They have chair exercises too for sport.
Support, not
sport. Oh, sorry. Support. I'm so sorry. I thought this was an unusual question. I'll have to go looking at after that. Say the question again.
Yeah, it's where do I get support for him? You know, it's very, very difficult, I think. Yeah, I mean, for the diagnosis, it took me a year to badger my doctor to get sent to London, where I knew they were diagnosing people who were BSL users. So everything was done with BSL. And when we got the diagnosis, we'd been going to London regularly. They have to do shared care. We live in Leicester. So he had his first appointment in Loughborough a couple of months ago. And there was supposed to be an interpreter booked who didn't come. And all of the tests for Loughborough to do the regular, let's see how you go for 3 months, were in English. My dad doesn't know English, he knows British Sign Language. So there was a barrier immediately. And so there was no care. Where do I get the care? Now, fortunately, the lady that was doing the tests said she would happily get in touch with the place in London and see if they can come up with something creative.
Right, okay. Well, one of the most expert people I know, and she probably won't bless me for giving you her name, is our care manager at the home in Evington.
Right.
It's a big care home. It's been recently refurbished. I've been up there filming and talking to her. We have a case where a lady came in with Lewy body dementia and she was desperately dehydrated from a previous care home. She's now fine, she's okay. I mean, you know, she's not dehydrated, but she's living as well as she possibly can. But I know that Debbie had to fight for a year for funding, for continuing care for her. Now, I know that care home funding is different to what you're looking for, but Debbie knows all the ins and outs, and all our home managers do, because they have to fight for it. They also have people in assisted living as well, which takes them into that area. So I'm sure if you look her up on the website, her name is Debbie Jackson, and arrange to go in and see her, say you'd like some advice, you'll find her very helpful.
Because I do work for a support service, and we are noticing that a lot of our elderly members who work with the deaf, they are, some of them are just wasting away. They're actually just going into a shell. And they have no communication with anyone.
That's so
sad. It is really sad, and so it's something that's on my heart.
Absolutely. Even at our head office, we have a signer. So I think you'll find it there. I just have to smile, and I thought you were referring to sport.
I know, it's fun. It's fun. It's fun.
If you just get yourself a parachute, it's fine. Problem solved.